The Heart of Rural America is brought to you by the new auction platform, Bid on Beef. We invite you to buy beef the cowboy way through an honest bidding process where you have the power to pick the ranch, pick the cut, and pick the price. You are in the driver's seat, and we are excited to ship beef directly to your door. Use code WELCOME10 for your first $10 to shop when you register to bid at bidonbeef.com. Welcome to the Heart of Rural America podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Radke, an American cattle rancher and motivational speaker, raising my kids and writing children's books in South Dakota. There's a David and Goliath story unfolding in agriculture today. And I don't know about you, but my money is on the underdog, the hardworking folks who value faith, family, freedom, and their farming communities. This show will highlight the untold stories of these resilient and determined families who I have the great pleasure of meeting in my travels across this nation as an agricultural speaker. It is my hope that their stories will remind us to live with great courage because we are not alone in this fight to keep producers on the land and meat, dairy, and eggs on the dinner table. Now let's hit the dusty trail together as we uncover the heart of rural America.
Welcome to your show. Here's my mom, Amanda Radke.
Hey, everybody. It's Amanda Radke back for another episode of the Heart of Rural America podcast, the show where we highlight great people doing inspiring things in their rural communities to make agriculture in this country stronger. You guys are in for a real treat today. One of my dear, dear friends, the one and only Representative Liz May from Kyle, South Dakota, joins the show. Liz, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Amanda. Glad to be with you today.
It's been a blessing to get to know you through, you know, the political arena in Pierre. And I remember it was January at the beginning of the session, and I'd admired you from afar for a long time, because if you guys know Liz, or if you don't know Liz, she's someone you need to know, but she is like this tenacious Catholic cattlewoman, business owner, like tough as nails. She tells the truth. She tells it like it is. And I just remember thinking, man, when I grow up, I want to be just like Liz. And so when I finally got to meet you, I was fangirling a little bit. We recently got to travel to Washington, D.C. together a couple weeks ago and spend some time together. And you are just one of a kind. And so today, I guess, you know, there's so many topics we can talk about because you're a wealth of knowledge in a lot of arenas. But I think just to kick off the show, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got involved in the legislature?
Well, born and raised in Harding County, South Dakota. I always tell people, if you're not from Harding County, there's probably no reason you'll go there. Wind blows all the time, a lot of snow. My parents had a ranch. So yeah, I was born and raised up there. And then I found love and moved to the southwest corner of the state on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And my husband and I, we ranch, cow-calf operation. We have quarter horses and we show a lot of horses. And I made the mistake 20 years ago of buying the small grocery store in Kyle's. I have two kids, four grandkids, love the country life. Oh, politics. I never wanted to be involved in this at all. But two good friends, a Republican and a Democrat, the Republican being Betty Olson from Harding County, who was in the legislature for years and years, kept bugging me. And she was serving at the time with Jim Bradford, who was a Democrat from down here in this area. Both very ag-oriented, cattle-oriented, rancher-oriented, always working on bills. And they used to come and sit at my table. Jim would stop every time he was here and just beg me and beg me. And he said, we need more producers down there. We've got to get people elected that can go down there and represent the industry. And I was just like, I am not interested in that. You guys are doing a great job. Just keep it up. Well, after about 6 years, they finally beat me down hard enough that I said, well, okay, I'll try it. I lost an election or two, but I did finally get in. And I thought, well, this will be easy. I'll just go down there, tell the story, get everything straightened out. A couple weeks, we'll come home. It didn't work out that way. I was there about 2 weeks, and my seatmate was Brock Greenfield at the time, which now I'm very happy that he was, because he taught me the ropes. He'd been there quite a while. And I just said, after 2 weeks, I said, Brock, I said, I'm done with this. I'm going home. You guys don't get anything done here. And word must have kind of got around on the floor. And the next thing I know, I've got this great big Marine that's standing behind me, and he said, Representative May, you need to suck it up. And I thought, well, okay, I'll stay a couple more weeks, but you guys need to start getting some things done. Anyway, 15 years later, I'm still here. I've been beat a few times. I go back. I guess I'm a brute for punishment. Our industry is not represented in here. We are a minority in the country, and we are a minority with our representatives. I mean, it's just, I don't know how you can have the largest industry in the state and the largest sector being livestock and have no representation, but that's how it is. So it's always a battle, good versus evil, trying to look out for livestock producers. So that's kind of my background, how I got into it. I guess, like I said, I'm a brute for punishment. I'm still there. I'd like to get out, but I want another producer. I want somebody that understands the livestock industry and everything that we're up against.
Well, I remember when we were in DC, you had talked to me about there was a specific cattle issue that kind of prompted you to go. Was it M-Cool, or what was it that frustrated you?
Well, the M-Cool, certainly. I mean,
that was your run for Congress, maybe.
That was my run for Congress, which we really don't need to spend a lot of time on, because that didn't turn out very well. But, well, I guess I shouldn't say that. I feel like that I was able to kind of bring it to everybody's attention, the problems that the industry was seeing and some solutions that, you know, I thought we could work on. So it wasn't a complete, you know, waste of time. There's so many problems in agriculture, specifically with the livestock. And I really think that a person, you know, if you dig into the history of it and the antitrust laws, and we go back late 1800s with the Sherman Act, and then I can't remember 1920, 1921 when they came in with the Packers and Stockyards Act. So all these things have been on the books, but the problem is they're not enforced. If those were enforced, we could, I think, see a completely different scenario for our industry and where we've been prior and where we're going. So it's frustrating to me, because my heritage, my grandfather left home, Plainsville, Nebraska, when he was 14, walked up with a brother and a cousin, ended up in Deadwood, peeled potatoes, did all kinds of things, and then went to work for a guy by the name of Ed Lemon. That's Lemon, South Dakota is named after. Big sheep rancher. Ed gave my granddad bum lamps for pay. Anyway, long story short, my granddad and my grandmother and their two homesteads ended up with a very large operation, and they did it on their own, no handouts, just a lot of hard work. And so I think about that part of our industry is always in the back of my mind. People that have put so much blood, sweat, and tears into building the industry into what it is today, to see it being torn apart because of misguided policies. That's just my opinion. I think that people that think that the government is the answer, it might be the answer if you don't want to work very hard, or if you don't want to make some hard decisions. But if you want to save this industry, there's nothing that government can do but just get out of the way. Quit trying to micromanage every detail. But that's a constant battle. It doesn't matter if you're talking about the cattle prices or the sale barns or all the different organizations. You know, I think about the federal government and what we just went through with Charles and Heather Maude, how unnecessary that was. Absolutely unnecessary. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, we've become a country of consumers and not producers. That's and right. So we just consume, we don't produce. That can't go on. We're not going to survive. Our industry and a lot of other industries are not going to survive if we don't turn that around.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, I'd never really spent time in Pierre before this carbon pipeline came along. I'd never testified on a bill, never really watched firsthand some of these legislators who say all the right things. I'm a constitutional conservative, and I believe in small, limited government, and they sound good until you get to Pierre, and then you hear what they're actually voting on and advocating for. And then you start hearing buzzwords like economic development, and they're picking winners and losers in agriculture, and these big corporate welfare guys come in and they're looking for these free handouts. It's like, when did we become a government that picks winners and losers in the free and fair market. And once you start noticing the pattern, you notice it's the good old boys club where they're just reallocating wealth really on our backs and on the taxpayer dollars, while small business owners like you and I are, we're not asking for any handouts. All we're asking for is a free and fair playing field and let people compete. It's frustrating to say the least. At Radke Land and Cattle, we proudly use Advanced Ag Products BioReg Plus. With its proprietary coating technology for slow release of essential oils in the lower GI tract, BioReg Plus products are designed and proven to help beef producers with overall performance, feed intake, gut integrity, nutritional support, immunity, fertility, and reproductive health. With the rising cost of beef cattle production today, having optimal performance and minimizing health challenges in every head counts. Learn more at bioreg.com and tell them Amanda sent you.
The Heart of Rural America is presented to you by CK6 Consulting Services. I have the great pleasure of working alongside the CK6 team, including Chris Earle, Wes Tiemann, and Cody Fleeman, and it's an honor to assist cattle producers as they strive to meet their business goals. With a purebred Angus specialization, we have a full slate of auction sales coming up as we work to maximize price discovery and capture true value for our clients and customers. Plus, let us help you identify your next herd sire for the upcoming breeding season. At CK6 Source, you'll find great customer service, fast shipping, and a focus on leading Angus genetics. Learn more about what we do at ck6consulting.com and ck6source.com. We would love to assist you any way we can. God bless.
Right now, we are suffering under these high property taxes. The citizens are revolting. Well, why is that? You know, I think back specifically, I guess, during the Noem administration. That's when I really started noticing it. I noticed it some in the Dugard administration, but not to the extent that it came under the Noem administration. But the idea to invite everybody in the world to move to South Dakota because we want the lowest unemployment rate. What's that done? It's grown our big cities. We have all the housing issues, and all those housing issues being propped up by TIFs. All these problems I feel we have asked for by trying to grow too fast. It's not a natural growth. It's a pay-to-play type growth. Bring them in, use taxpayer dollars to get them to come, give them tax breaks. That's not natural.
So you have True Shrimp and you have Gevo, and neither one of them came to fruition. And how many millions and millions of dollars did they get as a free gift from the taxpayers of South Dakota? Sorry, I didn't mean to interject there. But
yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, we could talk all day long about that. I mean, I brought that bill last year to just get rid of the future funds, and it lost on the floor because, oh, well, there's some good that comes of it. Well, there's a lot of stuff that comes that's not good either. I mean, I think about some of the funds that have been given to Bell Brand. We actually have to do that. I mean, what, they're not going to make cheese here if we don't give them a break? If they've got to have a break, what about, and the problem with the future funds, which irritates me, is the fact that it's the small businesses in South Dakota. I think it's 98,000 small businesses that are paying into that fund every quarter through the unemployment tax. And that's how that fund is been created. And, you know, I've had so many people argue with me, oh, it's done so many good things over the years. And yeah, well, it's all artificial. To me, it's not real. If it was real, it wouldn't need to be propped up. Very frustrating. Very frustrating. And then it comes into, it starts affecting this industry. I mean, wind and solar, the 45Q, all of those things, you know, the big fight with the carbon pipeline. I mean, you know, that was all artificial. It was money, taxpayer money. It wasn't for the good of anything other than the money. They wanted the money.
At the expense of the individual landowner, who, if you are a landowner, that is a business in and of itself. Like, who is the government to say, hey, this company can do better? I mean, it sets a pretty crazy precedent. And I know you've got big wind and solar projects headed out west that are just going to gobble up thousands of acres of the beautiful South Dakota prairie. I want to touch briefly, you mentioned also the 45Q. And for people who don't know, Liz was one of the folks that went with me, and as well as Speaker of the House John Hansen and Speaker Pro Tem Carla Lems and Senator Mark Lopke. And we were there with the message of we need to cut the 45Q tax credit. It's notable that Dusty Johnson couldn't meet with this South Dakota delegation. He had no time for us, but it didn't seem like there was much of an appetite to get rid of this credit, Liz. But I mean, make it make sense. When we are trillions of dollars in debt, why are we funding things like carbon sequestration?
The thing of it is, that's another thing that's artificial, because, you know, I have so many of my farmer friends say, well, you know, what are we going to do if we can't grow corn and make ethanol? And how about growing food?
Or get some cows again.
Or, you know, I understand the farmer's position. They have been put in this position, and it started in the 30s, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the subsidies in order to just keep going. But this is such a boondoggle. This whole thing is just a scam. I go around and around and around with my liberal friends, and I have a lot of them that I love dearly. Mm-hmm. But you had to buy into the big lie, right, to agree to this. The farmers I know, they didn't buy into the big lie, but they bought into the money.
The money that comes with playing along.
Playing along the game. And at some point, you just have to, I tell people I usually can't speak very good unless I'm mad. And when it comes to these subsidies for this Green New Deal or climate change, which climate change is so vague, what's that mean? I think back and when I was growing up, I had to move home in 77 because the snow was so bad. Well, that was the year Al Gore said, we're going into an ice age. And I was thinking the whole time, digging cows out of snowbanks, geez, is he really right? No, sun started shining in the spring. Everything went back to normal, you know. So climate change is a very vague term. Climate changes all the time. So I'm a little off key here, I guess. But
well, no, I agree. It's to me, I could never agree to the premise of a lie. The climate change narrative has changed so much over a generation that it's like at some point your alarmism isn't really holding true because none of your predictions ever happen. And I think God's design is bigger than people. And even this carbon pipeline company sequestering carbon emitted, we're not going to change the temperature of the earth by even 1%, you know, so we're paying how many billions of dollars to do what? To do nothing, to virtue signal and to appease liberal policies and to really reallocate wealth. And that's the frustration because I see it happening in the cattle industry right now. The American Angus Association has gotten into bed with Jeff Bezos for a methane score. I don't know because, well, we have to have a seat at the table. And I remind people, no, the rancher built the table. We get to decide who's at our table. That kind of leads me to maybe the next topic I'd like to talk about because I see this whole narrative playing out in the cattle industry as well. We see in Denmark and places overseas where they have an environmental score, an emissions score. Cattle are having to be, you know, sold off and culled at a rapid rate for their climate goals or whatever. And it's like, here in the United States now, we're pushing for mandatory EID in cattle. And it's like people say, oh, it's nothing. It's just updating the tags that we already use. But we don't know who stores the data. There's no money funding it. So you can't find the tags. There's confusion in the countryside. And again, it's an encroachment to me. It has nothing to do with the environment. It has nothing to do with all these other things. It's an attack on private property rights. And I guess I'd like your thoughts on this whole EID thing. And is there anything that we can do like on a state level to keep the federal government from encroaching on an individual cattle rancher's private property rights and their, you know, their cattle inventory?
Well, EID, I don't even know where to start on that. Why? Why is it needed? Okay, so they tell us, well, traceability. So if there's disease, okay, did we have a problem somewhere? To me, you don't implement something if you don't have a problem. Mm-hmm. And so they're implementing this because they say we need traceability in case we have a disease outbreak, which we haven't had. I don't foresee us having any. We had a traceable system the way it was. So then my mind goes to politics. Okay. So if there's nothing to base that on, then it must be politics. So in politics, always follow the money. So who's making the tags? Who's benefiting from the tags? What's the agenda? To me, the agenda is control. My dad said years and years and years ago, I can remember him saying this, and I'm thinking he's crazy. If they control the food, they control the people. And we've heard that over and over and over again, which is absolutely correct. So if they have a mandatory tracking system where they have all of Liz May's cattle, her husband's cattle, son's cattle, Amanda's cattle, they all have them. They know where they're at. They know how many they have. Well, what if there's a drought? Say there's a drought. So then are they going to tell us, well, it's a drought. You need to sell off cattle. Mm-hmm. Or your carbon footprint is too heavy. I mean, we're seeing it overseas now, what they're doing.
You could be denied access to credit, as an example.
Yes.
Decide you are not green enough.
It's once again, you've had to buy in to the original lie coming from as far back as I can remember in the 70s anyway, hearing about it. You know, used to be back when I was growing up, everybody raised 3-year-old steers up in our country. Almost every ranch sold 3-year-olds, and they were all grass-fed. Going in, I suppose, 1,100 pounds, 1,200 pounds. I remember when everybody had to get out of the 3-year-olds, and then they had to go to 2-year-olds, and then they went to yearlings. And I remember the excuse was, they don't fit the box. Well, what was the box? Well, the box was vertical integration is what it was. Everything just keeps, they might not get it all at once, but they just keep moving and moving and moving.
Incrementalism. And yes. Don't you even think, like with the EID thing, you know, our average rancher is over 60 years old. Cattle markets are high. And okay, you're going to have to change. You're going to have to do something different you've never done before. That was an easy way to force retirement of a whole bunch of ranchers who don't have the next generation coming back. And I've always contended that the American cattle rancher is one of the last really free independent demographics that's not really reliant on the system. Yeah. And so, of course, it always seems like, I think that there is a reason the cow is always the one that's being attacked. I think there's a reason. Yeah. Do you want to talk about the Packers? What do you want to talk about, Liz?
You really want to get me started on the Packers.
Well, I know when you're mad, you get spicy, and that's fun. So.
Working cattle can be stressful at times, but the job is made so much easier with equipment that is safe, strong, and simply designed. I highly recommend Real Tough Livestock Equipment for all your working facility needs. We just installed the deluxe chute at Radke Land and Cattle, and it has been an absolute game changer as we run cows through our chute during AI season. It's durable and easy to use, and it's made to last a lifetime. Real Tough offers a wide range of products, including calving barns, panels, loading chutes, tubs, alleys, and portable working systems. Manufactured in the US of A, Real Tough is family owned and operated. Their commitment to helping farm and ranch families truly exemplifies what this show is all about. Learn more at realtuff.com, that's T-U-F-F, and be sure to tell them Amanda sent you to receive an extra bonus with your order. Let's get you some iconic green Real Tough equipment headed your way. I promise you're going to love it. You guys know, as a beef girl, I take grilling very seriously around here. And I've been using Redmond Real Salt for over a decade to season my steaks and burgers. It's unrefined, ancient sea salt exactly as nature made it. It contains 60-plus naturally occurring trace minerals, and it truly brings out the best of the beef we raise at home on the ranch. This American family-owned business also focuses on livestock products. And at Radke Land and Cattle, we are proud to use the beneficial Redmond Real Salt minerals to get back to the basics and help our cattle improve fertility, immunity, and feed efficiency. It's natural, simple, and effective for people and livestock. Discover more at redmondagriculture.com and redmondlife.com and use code RADKE to save. Or contact a local dealer and mention my name for a special discount.
The Packers. I don't know why it's so hard for people to get their mind around this. 85% is controlled by four. big monopolies.
Two that are foreign-owned, by the way. Foreign-owned. JBS is known for bribing 1,500 politicians in their home country of Brazil.
Yeah. Before 1986, we had like, what was it? 12 or 1,300 federally inspected plants. Cash sales were common. The rancher then at least had a little bit of pricing power. We had our local sale barns. We had more of a true market access, I think.
With competitive bidders. And,
yeah, and the promotion, it was all voluntary. You know, it was all grassroots. You know, our policies were driven by the grassroots. And then after that, 1986, when they brought in the beef checkoff and the consolidation of all of this, what do we got?
The lowest I think
now there's somewhere around 500 federally inspected plants. Most of all our fed cattle, I think there's like 20 large ones that feed the majority. And we wonder why we're in the position we're in. And everybody says, oh, you're just against NCBA and you're against the checkoff. I'm against vertical integration and I'm against taking away the free market. Mm-hmm. NCBA promotes beef. They don't promote cattle. They promote beef. They can bring in, as a grocery store owner during COVID, I get meat in. I sell a lot of tripe, things like that, a lot of organ meat. And I would have it marked from Zimbabwe or, I mean, some far off. And I'm thinking, what? Yeah. Why am I getting this? You know, but what they can do is they all they have to do is bring that in. They bring it in. I'm thinking Texas. Okay, they bring it in. They mix it in with ours, and then they put product of the USA on there. Well, everybody just automatically thinks, well, my beef is being born, raised, and slaughtered here in this country. No, it's not. So when NCBA comes out with all these, oh, we're a bunch of conspiracy theorists, and we're trying to destroy the industry, and, you know, the dollar is, for every dollar that the producer puts in, they're bringing $13 revenue in. Well, I don't know where that's at or where it's been since 1986. We sure haven't seen it. And why does it have to be mandatory? Why can't it be voluntary? I would have no problem giving a dollar if I had a say-so about how that was spent. But we don't have a say-so. We are paying for our own demise. Period. End of discussion. They can call me a conspiracy theorist, whatever. I'm old enough. I've been through it. I understand it. I see what's happening. You know, when you lose over 500,000, 600,000 ranchers since 86, and you want to say that had nothing to do with the checkoff was doing its job. Well, what exactly was their job supposed to be with that dollar? I always thought we were paying a dollar to strengthen the industry and keep those numbers.
You know, we don't have much time left in the show, but there's a few things I wanted to talk about. Number one, I always like to be optimistic or talk solutions. Yeah. So what would be the solution to save the American cattle rancher in your mind? For me, top of mind would be, I think Trump could have a Teddy Roosevelt moment and bust up the monopoly. I think if he had the right people in his ear, that would be my step one. But I'd love to hear, what does the American cattleman need to survive and thrive?
Well, we have to keep beating the pavement on the antitrust laws. The law's there if they would just enforce it. And, you know, for years and years, I've just begged. And President Trump, he's got an opportunity. He could bust him up, do what Teddy Roosevelt did and bust him up and get us back to a position where we're in charge. We're not being overrun by these multi-billion dollar corporations that are destroying this industry. And at the state level, the message needs to come from the top. In the governor's office, that message should be front and center all the time. It should be every time they go to DC, every time they meet with the USDA, every time the farm bill is being discussed, all of it. That needs to be drilled in and not let go. Because the problem is in DC, after being out there with you guys, it's pure on steroids by 1,000. You know, we can do resolutions and stuff at the state level, and we do that. We send them in. But until all the states, all our livestock producing states get involved, you know, kind of team up like we did with the carbon pipeline and get people moving. You know, I'll just keep voicing my concern every time I get a chance, and love to debate different people on different issues, because I don't like being called a conspiracy theorist. I've lived it. So that's not conspiracy.
I'm going to link the particular article you're referring to, because I think people would be interested to read it and in the show notes. So I will reference that, because I know exactly what she's talking about.
The other big bill, of course, was 1052, which out of all my years of being in peer is probably the biggest win that the people of South Dakota have ever experienced. And I'm hoping with that win that we can keep it going.
Just getting started, I think. And
I hope so.
I think it was a wake-up call. I mean, that was a lot of citizens that got active. And it struck me that day of 1052 in committee when you had 300 people in that room. And you had grown men crying, saying, "Me too, I support this bill." The fact that they even had to go to peer to beg to maintain their God-given property rights is just appalling. But I think the lesson is if you're not paying attention, man, you're on the menu. Like Liz said, there's not too many cattle ranchers in Pierre. I can think of Mark Lopke and Spencer Gosh. There's not very many. And these other guys will use your industry as talking points that they're the champion and they're the cowhands of your industry. And They're not.
I have people say, "Well, this organization's saying this or this organization's saying that. We don't know who to listen to." Well, as a legislator, you know, I've had to learn a lot of things that I wasn't involved in. So I try to give as much information as I can to legislators that have questions. So it's our job, too, to educate, educate, educate. And it's just like telling a story. You just tell it over and over and over. It's like Senator Schoenbeck asked me one time, he said, "What is a cull cow?"
Oh, it's funny. One of my favorite things you've ever said is that you've given advice in peer. If you want to know how to tell the real ranchers versus the fake ones, look at their cowboy boots. Are they brand new or do they have manure on them? So I think that's a good metric of character in general. But okay, final piece. Liz, there's this great picture of you and I that I just cherish. It's NDC at the memorial for World War II. And it was D-Day. We were sitting there and you told me this incredible story about a family member. And I just think to close out the show, you wrote such a beautiful piece about that, but talk a little bit about that and just what the service and sacrifice of those who keep us free.
Yeah, it's just, well, we think of what we do as being so important and what they did in World War II, well, one, but two, just as so, I don't know, I guess because of maybe my uncle and the things that different ones that I know that struggled really basically the rest of their living days with the horrors at the beaches and what they went through. And so I've always thought, you know, as a legislator, what we do is really, it's pretty small, but freedom is not free and people don't understand that. And that was just a really, I had never been there at night with the fountains and it was just so serene to me. And it brought back a lot of memories of my uncle and of another great uncle that was one of them that held the flag up in Japan and Iwo Jima. And, you know, what those guys went through. And my mother lost her high school sweetheart in Pearl Harbor in the bombing. And so, you know, we just have to remember all of those things, and everything that we do needs to be because of what people before us did. And we've got to preserve it and work very hard. We're going to have disagreements, but that's the great thing about being in America. We should be able to have a conversation, a debate, and be able to come to some kind of agreement. But we all should be in agreement that those sacrifices were very, very important. And we cannot let them down. We can't let our freedom slip away.
It was a special moment, and kind of contrasted to another moment we had in D.C. was getting to go be on the House floor and watch a vote take place. And I remember we all left so angry because Congress, those representatives were disrespectful and talking, and there was no decorum. We couldn't have phones to even document it, but it was a travesty. It was really, really disappointing.
That was a very, very disappointing. I remember thinking, this is not representation. We elect people to represent us, and that floor, the way they were conducting themselves. I was shocked, and I still can't hardly think about it. Who are they representing? There's no debate. When do they debate? They debate at midnight. One goes out on the floor.
They all have their agendas.
And they've all got their agendas.
And their handlers and their donors. And yeah.
No, it was very disappointing. I was very disappointed. But
we get the government we fight for, right? And we advocate for the only way to
there
fix
was no,
it.
There was no Davy Crockett coming through the doors. Let's put it that way.
I don't think so, Liz. Well, hey, this show went way too fast. We're going to have you back on the show again soon, but I'll let you get back to ranching and the grocery store. But thank you so much, Liz, for your time. And thank you for your service to this great people of South Dakota.
Thank you, Amanda, for everything you do for the industry.
While I've got you here, I would love to invite you to check out my website, AmandaRadke.com. Each week, I share my column, this podcast, and new items to shop for farm and ranch families, including my children's books that celebrate agriculture. Use code DUSTYTRAIL to save 15% on your next purchase. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my small business and for your continued support in keeping me on the road fighting for farm and ranch families. I'm thankful to each and every one of you who tune into this show each week. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review to let me know how you're liking the content and our guests. Until the next time we meet on the Dusty Trail, I'm Amanda Radke, and this is the heart of rural America.